Gary Daffin is executive director of the Multicultural AIDS Coalition. MAC is the largest and oldest agency in New England focused exclusively on HIV in communities of color, working in partnership with a wide range of faith and community-based organizations. We thought we'd get his spin on where we are in the fight against the HIV/AIDS epidemic. Hi, Gary.
Hi, Charlotte.
Tell us about the Multicultural AIDS Coalition.
Well, as you said, we're the largest organization that focuses exclusively on HIV/AIDS and communities of color. We've been around since 1989. We do a lot of prevention work, working with gay and bisexual men, with immigrants, particularly people from sub-Saharan Africa, and we work with women, women who are in the sex industry or women who are partners of folks who inject drugs. And we also do a lot of work with other organizations trying to help them work better with diverse populations. And as you said, we do a lot of work with the faith community trying to reduce the stigma around HIV in communities of color.
What inspired you to get involved with this issue?
Well, I think any gay man back in the late 80s, early 90s had to face HIV head on. And again, it was a time before we had antiretrovirals. So for me, it was just a natural thing to do, to get involved and try and help educate the community. I mean, at the time, I wasn't professionally involved at all. You know, we didn't know a lot about HIV, and we didn't know what the future held. And I think the government wasn't really paying much attention, and so it was up to the folks in the gay and lesbian community to really fight and try and move the government and the healthcare industry to pay attention.
There's a significant rise in new infections among young Afro-American males who do not identify with being gay, but instead as MSM, men who have sex with men, and then bring them home to their wives. How do you deal with this?
Well, I think there's some assumptions there that aren't quite correct. I mean, I think we have to remember that back in the early days of the epidemic, the disease wasn't really thought to be an illness that affected black men, or at least black men felt that way. And so I remember my friend Michael Richmond, who first got me involved with trying to start a program that specifically focused on black gay men. He was a person living with HIV and really convinced the State Health Department to focus on that population because people just didn't think that, you know, it was an issue for black gay men. Now, of course, we know that the highest prevalence rates are among black gay men across the country. Now, with respect to, you know, men who don't necessarily identify as gay, I think there's a lot of misconception about how HIV is actually being transmitted out there. And the whole concept of the down low, meaning, which is something that we've come to view as an explicitly black gay men's issue, it's really just a matter of people who are closeted. You know, men who have sex with men have been closeted for ages. And there are black men who also don't identify as gay, don't tell people that they're gay, and may in fact be also married or bisexual. Now, the assumption that people leap to is that these are men are being unsafe and therefore infecting women. But if you look at what the studies have shown us, in fact, men who identify as gay actually tend to have higher rates of HIV infection than men who do not identify as gay, and men who are you know, engaged in sex with women as well, they tend to actually take more precautions. So there's a, I would say, miscommunication. I think this issue has gotten a lot of attention, but a lot of the facts haven't really gotten through. But nevertheless, we have to go out and talk to people about the fact that when you have sex, you are possibly putting yourself at risk, whether you are a man having sex with a man, a woman having sex with a man. You can't make the assumption that you can tell who people are who are living with HIV. You can't make the assumption that you know who people's partners are. You have to ask them. You have to assess what your risk is. And if you aren't 100% sure, you need to make sure that you protect yourself. So I think, you know, one thing that we try to focus on to make sure that people understand that it's up to you to make the decision about your risk and to protect yourself. So whether or not the person you're with is telling you the truth, you need to be focused on the fact that you've got to protect yourself.
You do a lot of work with the black Christian faith community. How do you deal with homophobia within the black community?
Well, I would say we deal with it the same way we deal with it in any community, and I don't think that there's any difference in homophobia or fear of gay and lesbian people among black folks than among any other population, really. So, again, I think that there's a perception or there's a lot of attention paid to the fact that sometimes people in the faith community aren't supportive of gay and lesbian rights, and that was particularly the case around the whole gay marriage issue in Massachusetts. But we have been working for, I mean, since I've been director here about 10 years, we've had a very strong faith program, which we started. And we regularly meet with the coalition of all the black churches. And they have moved a long way, I have to say, from the first time I went to meet with them to now. And I believe that the basic way to approach it is to simply respect people and expect them to respect you as well. I mean, I think that's why we have a fairly successful program here, because we understand that pastors have a lot on their plate. We understand also that they may not be quite where we want them to be. It's like lobbying in the legislature. Even though people aren't with you just yet, you never give up on getting their vote. And so we expect that it's going to take a while to move some of the ministers and some of the congregations. But we've had a lot of success, and we do have a lot of ministers who do get it and who do understand, who are willing to talk about the need for people to get tested and for the need for people to be supportive of HIV programs, and the need for people to not contribute to the stigma surrounding the disease. So it's a step-by-step process, and it's a one-on-one process trying to essentially educate people about why it's important that they understand that HIV is a real issue in communities of color, and that they could be contributing to the spread of the disease by spreading misinformation about the people who are most affected.
With HIV AIDS, how can we find a common thread between the LGBT community and communities of color to fight this epidemic?
I think HIV AIDS is an area where communities of color, the black community and the gay community, do in fact work well together. And particularly if you take the example of people living with HIV, I think that we would all do better to see how well people who come from various different backgrounds who are dealing with the disease personally, how well they work together in creating programs and advocating and find it easy to put aside differences. And that's one thing that I've seen as I've worked in the industry or in the field, is that people living with HIV are really focused on what's the best way for us to fight this disease, what's the best way for us to prevent other people from becoming infected, regardless of whether they are at risk because they may inject drugs or because they're gay and bisexual men or because they're immigrants. So in a way, this disease forces us to look at what we have in common. And in terms of the black community and the gay community specifically, we both have strong civil rights histories. The civil rights movement that has really changed the country has looked at a particular community. And I think there are things that we can each learn from each other about points in those movements that we may need support in, that we may not. I think in the marriage fight, we saw the other side, people who were against gay marriage, try to pit the black community against the gay community. And that, I think, is a mistake for us to fall into that trap. And certainly in the HIV movement, of the people who are most affected, I see them working together very, very well and sort of learning from each other.
Are the 20-somethings still leading the stats in new HIV cases?
Yes, unfortunately, and it's a real tragedy. There are about 1.1 million people in the U.S. living with HIV, and of those, about 21% don't know they have the disease. But each year, that's the total number of people living with HIV, but each year there are about 56,000 new infections. And of those 56,000 new infections, half are young people under the age of 25. Half are also black, and half are also gay men. So those three populations are really bearing the brunt of new HIV infections. And so we really need to pay attention to making sure that there's education about HIV for young people. And one of the ways we need to do that, and a way that I think that we have been very negligent in our educating young people about sex and sexuality. We really need to have a more comprehensive sex education program all across the country. And that is going to take some time to do because there's such a resistance to giving young people the tools they need to protect themselves. I mean, it's a very simple idea. We just need to tell people how HIV is transmitted and other sexually transmitted diseases as well. But we need to be giving people the knowledge and the tools, which means condoms, to protect themselves. And I think it's a real shame that we don't. And the result is we have these statistics. Half of all the HIV infections in the country are among young people under 25 years old.
Douglas Brooks, an outspoken AIDS activist from Massachusetts, who has been HIV positive for 20 years, has been named to the Presidential Advisory Council on HIV and AIDS. What do you think about this?
I think it's great. I mean, Douglas is a colleague and a friend. In fact, I saw him the night before he went off to the first meeting. And it's very exciting to have someone from here, but also to have Douglas, who is, Douglas is a social worker, so he understands a lot of the different facets of the epidemic. Women's Advocacy Coalition. So it's good to see that group represented there.
What do you think about the Presidential Advisory Council on HIV and AIDS?
It's an important group to have if the president's going to listen to it. Most recent president, not the current one, really utilized it much. But I look at the membership now, and there's some terrific people on it. And the chair is Helene Gayle, which I think was a really wonderful move on the president's part. She is used to run the HIV STD department at the CDC. She's a fairly beloved figure in the HIV movement because she's been such a straightforward, outspoken proponent of doing what we need to do to really stop this disease, saying things in the way that we need to say them to the people we need to say them to. And that may seem like a simple thing, but in some quarters it has been the opinion that we really don't need to talk about gay men. That if gay men, for example, want to engage in sex with men, then, well, they deserve to have HIV, and we really don't need to spend a lot of public money trying to prevent it. I don't think that's the sentiment of the current administration at all. And in fact, I know that the president's new budget does include a special initiative that focuses on gay men. I don't know that they're new dollars, but at least they're trying to really target programming to the populations that really are at highest risk.
You also served as co-chair of the Massachusetts Gay and Lesbian Political Caucus. What are your hopes for our LGBT civil rights in the Obama administration?
But that's an interesting question. I think having Obama as president is a giant leap forward. I think his administration is very pro-gay. I think that they are careful and a little cautious, partly because of what they see as some of the trouble spots that the Clinton administration ran into when they started trying to do some things early on, particularly lift the ban on gays and lesbians working in the military. So they've been a little, I think, gun-shy in some ways. In other ways, they've been pretty straightforward. There are plenty of gay people working in the administration. They make no bones about the fact that they believe that people should have equal rights, with the exception of marriage. They haven't quite gone there, of course. But our community is expecting to see more and to move faster. And I think it's our right and our obligation to keep pushing until we have full equality. So I think we have to bear both things in mind, that this administration is wanting to do the right thing, maybe going a little slowly, which means we have to keep urging them along. But I expect that by the end of it, we will have made some significant advances. And of course, some of the things that he's trying to do with respect to healthcare will affect us, all of us, particularly those of us who are struggling with particular diseases like HIV. So I have high hopes for the administration, despite a year that was something of a slow start. I do think we'll get rid of Don't Ask, Don't Tell. There seems to be a real push by the administration, and there does seem to be support, certainly in the Congress, but even among some of the chief military officers. So I still have pretty high hopes for us.
What are your feelings about Scott Brown?
Well, I think that we will be surprised by his newfound moderation, I suspect. He has not been very supportive of gay and lesbian rights here. He voted against this many, many times, I think 25 times, against same-sex marriage, all the different votes. But I don't think he doesn't sound like he's supportive of removing the ban against gay and lesbian serving in the military. I think he's going to find that, Massachusetts is a moderate state. I mean, we're not all of a sudden become a red state of people all across the country. I was out traveling a little bit, and everyone keep saying, what happened in Massachusetts? Why did you people let this happen? And I don't think that he's a right-wing lunatic, but he is certainly more conservative than we would like, and I think more conservative than most Massachusetts overall is when it comes to gay and lesbian rights. So, you know, time will tell, but I would be happy to see him change completely and start voting with us and supporting our basic civil rights and our right to work wherever we want to work, our right to love whoever we want to love. That would be great. Again, we never give up. Keep trying, whether it's the legislator in Massachusetts, whether it's ministers, or whether it's the new U.S. senator.
Could you share with us any personal stories that really moved you since you've been involved with the Multicultural AIDS Coalition?
What I'm really moved by are people who come to us with, you know, little ability to kind of cope. And they may have a number of issues that they're trying to deal with, from finding a place to live, they're unemployed, they haven't told anyone in their families they have HIV. And then slowly, gradually over time, you know, as people get support, they find a way to advocate for themselves. And, you know, we try and engage people
there a question you wish people would ask you?
I wish people would ask about HIV vaccines. It takes a long time to find a vaccine for any particular virus. I mean, it took us 50 years to find a vaccine for the flu, 92 years to find a vaccine for typhoid. It's not a short-term adventure, if you will. We're part of a national vaccine research education initiative, which basically tries to educate people in the communities that are most affected that we need them to consider